Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello, the Olympics and Paralympics are back and are the perfect events to round off another epic summer of sport. The Olympic opening ceremony is nearly upon us, and in this special programme we meet some of the athletes flying the flag for the city in South Cambridgeshire, as well as Team GB. There's a mix of debutants and returnees, and in the next hour we'll find out how rower Imogen Grant has bounced back from her bronze medal heartache 3 years ago.
The past 3 years have really been informed by that loss and making sure that we do it justice and really putting it behind us.
Why British record holder Anne Harrod-Evans believes anything is possible as she looks to make more swimming history.
I always say never.
Why it's third time lucky for sailor Hannah Snellgrove.
We made it eventually.
How Tess Howard and her hockey team nearly missed out on Paris altogether.
This was the hardest process to get to the Olympics that there's ever been.
And head of the Paralympics in August, Will Hipwell, tells us why he has no regrets from Tokyo.
My main ambition was to go there and play to the best of my ability, which I believe I did.
My name is Daniel Baker, and you're listening to Cambridge Sports Special, The Pathway to Paris.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
In 2021, fine margins were all that stood between Imogen Grant and a rowing medal in her first ever Games. The 28-year-old, who is from Cambridge, and her partner Emily Craig fell milliseconds short of a bronze in the women's lightweight sculls final. But since then, the duo have become even more formidable and have won 3 consecutive world and European titles. And Imogen is thrilled to be back.
I grew up in Cambridge and spent a lot of time very close to the river, but I never quite managed to get on it and start rowing until I was at university.
Of course, the Olympics are coming up soon in Paris, and it's actually not your first time taking part in the Olympics, is it?
No, it's not. I was out there in Tokyo, but in a lot of ways, this almost does feel like a first Olympics. It's going to be the first time that my family is going to be there and we get a proper team announcement day, going to be able to interact with all of the athletes without this big cloud of the worry of COVID hanging over us. So I'm really excited.
I wanted to ask you about Tokyo in 2020 or 2021, as it ended up being. It must have been a really strange situation that you found yourself in, because the Games had already been called off once because of the pandemic. They were talking about cancelling them again, but they decided to get the Games to go ahead, and then there was a national emergency in Tokyo and a lot of things going on. What was it like to be taking part in competitive events under a backdrop like that?
I mean, I'm going to be forever grateful to the Japanese people for still holding the Games. I'm not sure many countries would have been able to with all of the restrictions and efforts that went into it. It sort of almost feels like a dream sometimes, like I sort of collectively hallucinated the entire experience. We weren't allowed to leave the athletes' village, so I never even saw the city of Tokyo. The only people that were there were fellow athletes and maybe the volunteers who were helping run it. It was almost like we got back and it almost felt like it hadn't happened. Like there was nobody there to witness it. We were in a different time zone for our family and friends. We were getting up in the middle of the night and nobody was there sitting in the stands other than the volunteers who were helping make it run and the few athletes that were racing on the same day. It was a really strange experience, but I'm still really grateful for the opportunity.
And in terms of your own experience as well, you very, very nearly got a medal. How disappointing was that for you to not get a podium finish in Tokyo?
Yeah, it's a really strange one. I'm really proud of that race in the final. The tip of the iceberg is all people ever see at the Olympic Games, and with everything that was going on behind the scenes and managing an entire global pandemic, we really did give everything. So I have to be really proud of how we raced. We were about 1 inch off the bronze medal and just half a second off becoming Olympic champions outright. And I think this Olympiad, the past 3 years, have really been informed by that loss and making sure that we do it justice and really putting it behind us as we lead into the next Games.
And as an athlete, how do you respond to disappointment in that way? And presumably you come back stronger from it, or you try and bounce back and put it out of your mind.
Yeah, well, I think for us, with me and my doubles partner, what was really important was doing just that, putting it behind us. We actually came back to the UK and raced at Henley, one of the biggest domestic regattas, just a couple of weeks after Tokyo. And we won that and there were spectators there. And that felt like a really important step forwards. And I think from that point onwards, we've been able to put that result to bed a little bit and just focus on the present.
I wanted to ask you about your partner, Emily Craig, actually. And the two of you are the just one of two unbeaten crews in the world going into Paris, I believe. And actually, you've won so many things. You've won the back-to-back Europeans and the World Games and stuff like that. I want to ask you about the dynamic in particular, actually, as well. What is she like as a sort of partner in the events?
Yeah, I mean, Emily's an incredible athlete. She's a little bit older than I am and much more experienced, especially when I was first coming into the team. She was really the person that taught me what it meant to row a double well and race a double well. So I owe a lot to her initial patience and teaching and guiding me when we were first put together in a combination. At this point, I'd almost describe our relationship more as sisters than anything else. Sometimes we get on each other's nerves, but ultimately we're both so aligned on the main goal of trying to win in Paris. And it's a really special relationship to have with someone. We spend so many hours around each other every day.
And of course, going into Paris, you actually won 2 golds last year. How pleasing was it to get those golds?
It was amazing. It never really gets old, crossing that finish line. Lightweight racing in particular is so tight because everybody weighs the same amount. There's less that you can use to get yourself an advantage. So it's never a given. And it's always amazing to be able to cross the line first, see the union flag go up on the flagpole and listen to the national anthem.
And away from rowing, you've been doing your medical studies and you are now a qualified doctor. What's that been like, managing your studies and your doctoring, if that's the right turn of phrase, with the rowing?
It's definitely been an interesting one. I've never really known rowing without my medical studies because I started in my first year at Cambridge. So in a lot of ways, actually, my passion for medicine started first. There's been lots of parts along the way where I think people have tried to push me to choose one or the other, choose between medicine and rowing. And I think I've always really pushed back from that and not wanted to compromise one for the other. And I hope that's a really strong message to young athletes out there, that they don't have to choose and you can do both. If you want it enough, you can make it happen. As for me, I graduated last year and I'm actually starting work as a doctor a decade after I started my degree, after the closing ceremony in Paris this August. So I'm very nervous, but I'm also very excited.
One of the precursors, of course, to Paris is the university boat race. Now, you've raced in it 3 times, I believe.
The last time that I raced the Oxford-Cambridge boat race was in 2022, and it was a really special year. It's a little bit different to the international racing because it's got bends and there's only 2 boats competing against each other, and it's about 3 times the length. But it's one of the most prestigious rowing events, and it certainly has a lot of media coverage. It was so much fun, and it's really sad to think that I'm never going to get to race another one.
And actually, I've got to ask you something about the women's race in particular. Now, I was watching on television, like the millions of people that were, and there was an incident in the middle of the race with, I think, some bumps, I think is the sort of technical term for these, and then Oxford were arguing the toss at the end with the umpire. What was your take on that particular incident?
Yeah, I was commentating. So I was crouched on top of one of the boathouses in front of a tiny screen with the other people commentating, Claire Balding and Kath Granger, laughing as I was tearing my hair out watching this very exciting race. In my opinion, I do believe that Oxford were in the wrong and essentially willfully steered into Cambridge to try and get Cambridge disqualified. And it was a real testament to the grit and determination of the Cambridge crew to not let that upset their rhythm. And the Cambridge women were able to row away from that in quite amazing fashion, really. I mean, this year was 2 of the most exciting races that we've had, especially given that Cambridge won both of them. And both crews coming in as underdogs and managing to overturn Oxford was absolutely amazing.
And back to Paris, of course, which is on the horizon. How's the preparation for that going?
Really good. We're speaking at the moment and we've just finished our final regatta as we lead into the final preparation of the last 2 months. And we won the final regatta, our final race before the Olympic Games itself. So everything's looking really good. It's not been without its challenges, but high performance sport never is.
And what would your hopes be this time around? Would I presume it's going to be a gold medal, right?
That's what everybody hopes for. I think it's every athlete's dream. Emily and I would love to win the gold, but it's never a given until you cross the finish line. And I think my main goal really is to just be really proud of how we race.
And I bet you're very excited for the games as well.
Oh, so excited. It's going to feel like a home games. I remember how special London 2012 was when I was still in 6th form and we got to go with my family and watch some of the events. To have another game so close just across the channel in Paris is absolutely amazing.
You're going to become a doctor pretty much as soon as the games end. So this is going to be your last Olympics then.
Oh, Oh, I wouldn't quite say that. I don't think I'm ready to give up one or the other just yet, but I'm going to see what working as a doctor feels like first.
Okay, so we'll hopefully see you again in 2028 and beyond.
Fingers
crossed. Brilliant. Well, Imogen, thank you so much for your time. It's much appreciated. And, well, very much leaves me just to say all the very best of luck in Paris and bring home the gold.
Thanks, Daniel.
Elbow and One Day Like This, a song which was performed at the closing ceremony of London 2012, which was a truly special event. You're listening to Cambridge 105 Radio, and this is Cambridge Sports Special, The Pathway to Paris, with me, Daniel Baker.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
2024 has already been memorable for swimmer Anne Harrod Evans. The 21-year-old from Great Abington, a village 7 miles outside Cambridge, was called up to Team GB's squad in April. And then just a few weeks later, she broke the British 100-metre breaststroke record in the AP Race International competition. The former Linton Village College pupil became the first British woman to complete the event in under 1 minute and 6 seconds. Anne Harrod was in Rome recently, competing in her final event before Paris, and I started by asking her how she came to take up swimming.
I started swimming, I guess, as a safety precaution, you know, just learn to swim. My older sister was swimming as well. And I guess we just slowly progressed through the local swim team, West Suffolk Swimming Club, based in Haverhill. And yeah, we slowly, I guess, started getting better and took up a lot more of our weekends traveling around. And yeah, we just started doing, I guess, meets around Cambridge, Bury. And that slowly progressed to regionals, nationals, international meets, and now the Olympics, which is exciting.
Was it always a dream to get into the Olympics?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I was younger and I got that, I guess, taste for success, you don't want that to go away. And you see when you go to nationals, all these, you know, older swimmers doing well, and you just dream, you know, one day that will be you. So I guess when I first got that call that I made it, that was the, you know, wow, I really have achieved my dream moment that I've always been dreaming of, which was very special.
And what was your reaction when you got the email through saying that you'd made it into the Team GB squad?
I thought I would be, you know, crying with excitement, but it was more just, I didn't know how to feel. Like, I was excited, I think, because the whole morning was very stressful because I didn't do as well as I wanted to in the trials. Obviously well enough, but not as well as I wanted to. So, you know, it wasn't a fully confirmed spot. So the morning of was very stressful. So I think the first thing I did when I got that email was just take a breath, like, I've made it, it's okay. But it was very exciting. The whole day was just such a special day for me.
Because obviously you tried to qualify for the Olympics in 2021, or 2020 as it sort of was initially, didn't quite make it. So you finally made it this time around. And actually, this has been a really good year for you because they say things happen in threes. You've been called up to the Olympics, you've set a British record, and hopefully maybe an Olympic gold would be the third, or Olympic medal would be the third in that particular trio.
That would be great. You know, I always say never, but, you know, right now I'm focusing on, I guess, trying to lower that record a bit more and just, I guess, pushing myself to see what I can do, maybe be the first female to go 64 in addition to, you know, 65. So I guess just pushing myself, seeing how fast I can go. But, you know, I was just watching a podcast and they were talking about, you know, how my PB was 107 earlier, just, you know, this year. So it's just crazy to think how far it's coming already. But excited to, you know, push it on more and see how fast it can come on.
You set a British record, as I was just saying a moment ago as well, and you managed to complete the 100 metre British breaststroke in less than 1 minute 6 seconds, I believe.
Yeah, so I did that at a meet in London, actually. So at trials, I was aiming to do it at trials and didn't quite get it. And it just happened that my next meet after trials was at that exact same pool, the London pool. And that was, I guess, my motivation. You know, I didn't quite achieve what I wanted to last time. So I went in, and then that's when I got the British record, which was, you know, such a good experience. The ex-British record holder was there as well. So it was nice to see her. She's retired now, but it was cool to see her because obviously she has been like a swimming idol for so long. So it was cool to have like her there to watch that and, you know, talk to her after.
I wanted to ask you about the games itself as well. They're taking place in Paris, and some of the athletes have said it's like a home games. It kind of is slightly reminiscent of London 2012 when we had them here, obviously. Last time the games were held effectively behind closed doors because of the COVID pandemic. Are you going to bring family and friends along for moral support?
Yeah, definitely. So my family's coming for the 100 breaststroke individually. And there's also some family, friends, and like people from my home, West Suffolk Swimming Club, who are like, have bought tickets, who will be there. So it is nice to have such familiar faces and, you know, the biggest competition of my life, I guess. But just knowing I have that support there abroad is really special to me.
And sometimes, of course, they say it does make all the difference as well. Ahead of your first games, what are your emotions at the moment? So I'm guessing there's a bit of nerves, a bit of excitement. Talk us through that.
Yeah, mainly excitement right now. I think the nerves will kick in more towards the games as it gets closer. But, you know, especially as it's starting to feel real, like as I said, we just like kitting out, then it really started to feel real, I guess. You know, putting on that like jacket, the ceremony jacket for the first time was, you know, the wow, I'm actually leaving in 5 weeks moment. But I think right now my focus is on just doing everything I can in training to prepare myself. So I'm kind of distracted by that in training, but very excited at the moment. The nerves will probably kick in.
What would be a successful Games for you? Would it be a medal, just a good performance, bettering what you've achieved this year? What would you say is the goal, really?
Realistically, my goal is, again, to just further my performance, better it even more. Again, lowering that British record would be amazing. A medal would be a dream, really, but, you know, that is really, I guess, pushing it. You know, anyone can get it. It's like in the mix. But just seeing how far I can progress, you know, semi-finals, finals, but yeah, I think ultimately just furthering my performance so far and carrying on this momentum.
And of course, the Games are quite special this year because it's the 100th anniversary of when the Games were last held in Paris, which was 1924. So there's probably going to be a lot of excitement in the city. And are you going to get the chance to do a bit of touristy stuff as well while you're there?
Yeah, I hope so. Swimming's one of the first Olympic sports to go on, so we can't actually go to the opening ceremony. But that also means that we get to finish sooner. So I think we are staying a bit longer, and then once, you know, everyone's done competing, we'll have some downtime to, I guess, explore. I think that's what my family are doing as well, using it as a 2-in-1 holiday. You know, swimming heats in the morning, Eiffel Tower in the evening.
Sounds like a great holiday, actually. And yeah. After the Games as well, have you got any more competitions lined up? Any more records or any other kind of crowns that you've got in your sights?
Well, after, so I guess we'll have some time off, but short course season will start in September. And I got close last season to that 100 breaststroke short course British record. So I definitely have my eye on that to get, I guess, the long course and the short course one. But I'm sure, I think there's short course Europeans or Worlds in December. So I guess that would be the end of season, short course season meet. But yeah, I think that's, I guess, the ultimate goal after Olympics.
And we'll possibly see you again in 2028 as well.
That would be amazing. That is a goal, and I hope that does happen.
The Games, of course, start in late July. We wish you all the very best, and we'll be following your progress from afar.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I won't just survive. Oh, you will see me thrive. Can write my story. I'm beyond the archetype. I won't just conform. No matter how you shake my core, 'cause my roots, they run deep. Oh, oh, you have so little faith. Just fight it and be transformed.
song very much associated with the 2016 Olympics, which took place in Rio de Janeiro, Katy Perry and Rise. You're listening to Cambridge Sports Special, the pathway to Paris on Cambridge 105 Radio, where we meet some of the local athletes competing in this summer's Olympic and Paralympic Games. Hannah Snellgrove spent 4 years studying here between 2009 and 2013 and considers herself to be an honorary resident of our city. And her dream of making it to an Olympics was so big, she even put her studies on hold for a year in a bid to qualify for London 2012. But she missed out on the Games, and 2 years later she lost her place in the British sailing team, which led to her retiring from the sport. However, Hannah came back, and in February the 33-year-old's lifelong dream finally came true when she was named in Team GB's squad.
I wrote in a diary when I was 15 that I wanted to go to the Olympics one day, and I'm now 33, so it's taken about 10 years longer than probably originally planned, but we made it eventually, and I joke that I've taken the scenic route, but it probably makes the final destination that little bit sweeter.
You first tried out for the Olympics back in 2012 when we had the Games here in London.
I did, yeah. So I was at Cambridge University from 2009. I matriculated at Gonville and Caius College. I studied natural sciences, and I did a year at university, and then it was, you know, the home games, and it was a big opportunity, and I really wanted the experience of doing an Olympic trials. I was really young, and I wasn't expecting to kind of really feature that heavily in the trials, but I did a year of sailing full time. I took a year out from 2010 to 2011, and it was a really valuable year, actually. I'm very glad I did it. It gave me a lot of sort of experience for going on to do future Olympic trials. But yeah, I actually ended up having a couple of really good trials events, and I was 11th in the World Cup and 14th at the Worlds in 2011. And I was actually sort of performed a lot better than I thought I would. But I think there's probably a big part of that is going into it with no expectations. And that was quite a big learning point. But I didn't win the trials for 2012. I didn't expect to. But my training partnered Ali Young, who was the GB representative. And I went back to Cambridge and finished my degree over the next couple of years.
Your passion for sailing is not a new thing. I believe you started sailing when you were 8 years old, and I think you had a setback. You obviously had some health issues and you were away for a couple of years. Just how hard was it?
It's been a couple of setbacks, to be honest. that was one of many. But yeah, I started sailing quite young. I was really fortunate to grow up near the coast, but everyone always assumes that you come from a sort of sailing family and your parents have a yacht, and that's just not the case at all. My parents are just about learned port from starboard now, which is really nice, and they've always been really supportive, but they're not sailors. I actually got into it as a bit of a skive. I joke it was a skive out of PE at school that's basically got really out of hand and turned into my career. I was terrible at sport, basically, and it came up as an option that I could pay my £2 pocket money and go sailing on Lymington River, where I live, every Wednesday afternoon, rather than doing all the sports I was terrible at school. So that sounded like a great idea. So I went and did that, and I joined the local children's sailing club called Salton Sailing Club. And it kind of went, I wasn't a natural sailor. I wasn't sort of really gifted from the start, but I just loved it. And I think that's almost more important, and just kind of kept doing it through my teen years. But yeah, I was really poorly with glandular fever and chronic fatigue in my sort of late teen years, so from 16 to 18, which is quite a critical point of youth sailing, really. It's where you're reaching the pinnacle of youth sailing and competing at top level and going to the Youth Worlds and things like that, which I didn't get to do. So it was quite tricky to get back into the sport afterwards. And I took a gap year before I went up to Cambridge and university to get back into my sailing, which I did quite successfully, and I ended up being asked to train alongside the British sailing team in, I think it was the autumn of 2009, which coincided with when I was coming up to Cambridge to study. So combining the two was quite difficult, but just about made it work over the following years.
I wanted to ask you about your years at Cambridge. You were there from 2009 to 2013, so you had a four-year stint in Cambridge, and you got your first class honours as well. What did you make of the city?
I love Cambridge. I think it's just such a beautiful place. It's very like Hogwarts, isn't it? I just think it's just a beautiful place. I love how close everything is. And I also love how quickly you can get out into the countryside. I did a lot of running to keep fit while I was up in Cambridge. And I would have my sort of hours loop out around the back of Grantchester and back to college that I would do before lectures in the morning. And I managed to convince some of my friends to come with me sometimes. And I loved it. I loved how quickly you could get out into the country, as well as having the kind of city vibe in the centre. So yeah, it was some really happy years living in Cambridge. I look back on it very fondly.
And how influential would you say your time at Cambridge was in getting you to where you are today?
Oh, I think it was incredibly so. I think, first of all, it gave me an amazing friendship group who I still have. And there's just so many little coincidences, aren't there, in life? So one of my best friends, another Hannah from my time in Cambridge, her family live in and around Weymouth, which is where the National Sailing Academy is. So I became like a surrogate daughter for a few years and lived on their sofa for a period of time before the London Games. And I think it just taught me how to time manage really well, would be my biggest sort of takeaway from university. I would be writing essays on trains on the way down to come sailing at weekends in Weymouth, and then sort of finishing them off on the train on the way home. And it was just that it was a really busy and sometimes stressful, but busy period of time. But I had to learn to really prioritize and time manage. And that was a big takeaway.
You're talking about how you had some setbacks throughout your sailing career. 2014 was one that's perhaps quite notable, when you lost your place in the British sailing team, and that was sort of due to financial constraints and things like that. But then sort of 2018 comes around, and 2019, you had two pretty good years there. Tell us what happened in those years.
Yeah, so 2014 was really tough. I went full-time sailing for 15 months after I graduated and left Cambridge. And as far as I was concerned, it was kind of full steam ahead, campaigning for the Rio Games. And suddenly I was deselected in the autumn of 2014. I didn't see it coming. It was a big shock. And I didn't really have a plan B at the time. So I retired. I joke that I retired badly because I've gone back into it. But I sort of tried to continue for a little while, self-funding, but basically blew all my savings and it wasn't really sustainable. So retired in 2015 at the grand old age of 24 or 25 or something, and had a couple of years of normal life, actually. So I worked as a journalist for the local paper, and I did quite a bit of sailing coaching, and also got really into my music again, which is something I really missed. I did a lot of at school and I missed it. So it was some really happy years, but I never quite let go of the fact that I didn't feel like I'd reached my potential in sailing. And in 2017, I took 2 weeks off of work, went to the World Championships in Holland, because I decided that was relatively local. I could stick a boat on the roof of my car and head off. And I got effectively spotted there by the British coach at the time, who was an American called John Bertrand, and he basically said something along the lines of, "Who the hell are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm Hannah and I write for the Leamington Times and I'm here on holiday." And he then helped me put together a self-funded campaign over the following year, and we did a crowdfunding campaign for a new boat at the beginning of 2018 and to launch this self-funded campaign. And it was amazing. It was really humbling. We made something like £7,000 in 3 weeks. And it was all sort of £20 here and there of various sort of factions of my life, which was incredible. And then towards the end of 2018, I was fourth at the World Cup event in the Olympic venue in Tokyo, and got reselected to British sailing. So that was an amazing feeling and an amazing year. And then in 2019, as my first top 10 at World Championships. But sailing's a really difficult sport, especially if you're from a country that's very good at it, because there's only one spot for each country in each class of boat at the Olympics. It's not like running where you can have multiple representatives. So even though I was seventh in the world, Ali was in France. She got a medal at the Worlds that year, I think. And so I didn't win the trials for Tokyo. So that was a tough time, because it was trials is over. It's 2019. Am I going to commit another 5 years of my life to this? But I did. And I'm pleased I did, because here we are. So it's been quite a long road.
Obviously, Paris is on the horizon and you must be very excited for it.
Yeah, incredibly excited. I think something I was really sort of thinking hard about in 2019 was, well, there's no guarantees you're going to win the next trials. So if you were to not win the next trials, what would need to be in place, or what do you need to feel like you've done in your life to be okay with that? And could I do that? Thought long and hard about it and decided that I could. And that was the decision to give it one more try. And I have an amazing squad now. It's a very difficult situation. Like you say, it's incredibly competitive. There's only one spot. I sail with two other female sailors who are quite a bit younger than me, Daisy and Matilda, but who are pushing constantly. They're incredibly good sailors. And we've really had a good time over the last 4 years, I would say, in that we've built a really strong squad. And we've realized that in order for somebody to try and get a medal at the Olympics, we really need to work together. And yes, only one of us will go, but it will be very much a team effort, and that person is going to the Olympics and representing the squad. And I feel that really strongly, that we're rivals and competitors on the water, but very much friends off the water. And to me, that's exactly how it should be done.
In terms of your targets for Paris, what would you say your primary goal or goals are?
Oh, I'd love to win a medal. And obviously everyone says that, but it's there's sort of more to it for that than me. And in our fleet at the moment, which I sail the Ilka 6, which is the women's single handed dinghy, the depth of the fleet is just incredibly strong at the moment. And there are different people on the podium at almost every regatta. So I think I'm trying really hard to judge my performance on not necessarily on the basis of numbers. I don't want to come away from the Olympics with, I don't know, say a sixth place and thinking you sailed the regatta of your life and being disappointed with that. So we've said really clearly that, you know, I'm going there to try and give the best version of myself as an athlete for that week. And if that brings home a medal, hopefully, if I do give the best version of myself as an athlete for a week, then the results will look after themselves, you know, and medal would obviously be the icing on the cake for sure.
And will your friends and family be joining you as well in Paris?
So my parents are incredibly supportive. They're going to be base camp back in the UK. So Lymington Town Sailing Club, which is my home club, are going to put on like Olympic watch parties and things. So my parents are going to be sort of the base camp. And then I've got a great cohort of friends, including some of my Cambridge friends, actually, who are coming out to Marseille. So I think I've got about 26 people, including my partner and friends, coming out. So that's going to be amazing. It's just that we don't really have the normal kind of sport where people get to come and watch you. Like, it's my friends have never really come and seen what I do and what I've dedicated so much of my life to doing. So that element of it's going to be really special for sure.
There is one final thing I'd like to say, other than good luck. You have got a song that you'd like us to play as part of the show.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Thank you. Yeah, so I play in a duo with my partner and we're called Bimbling and we play some of the local festivals and pubs and things like that. And shared a song, which is a cover, and it's of a song called Wrecking Days by Kitty McFarlane.
Oh, to the strand line he sang when a gale from the southwest blows for 3 days. Oh, to the rolling foam whose gift it brings on my home. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, plastic and stone. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways and cuttlefish bones. There lies a daily archive, a beachcomber's paradise, waiting at low tide. Impatience when the sea is high, for the waves to grow tired of painting the coastline. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, plastic and stone. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, cuttlefish bones. Find me a washed up story from a plastic bottle top, or untangle a fishing tackle that sailors forgot. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, plastic and stone. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, cuttlefish bones. From Lundy to the Lizard to the Isle of Wight, ships turn to driftwood overnight. Take care from Thames up to Tyne, from Humber, Forth, Fisher and German Bight. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, plastic and stone. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, cuttlefish bones.
The strand line, send a message to the Baltic Sea, to be found by a seafaring man with a line on his face for every high tide he's ever seen.
Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, plastic and stone. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, cuttlefish bones. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways, plastic and stone. Oh, for the wrecking days, Atlantic castaways.
Cambridge's Tess Howard and her hockey team made it to Paris, but they perhaps did it the hard way. The 25-year-old was Great Britain's top scorer with 4 in the qualifiers, but their path to the Games was far from smooth. GB beat Canada and Malaysia in the group phase, and despite losing to Spain, they made it through to the final stage. Their 3-2 semi-final defeat to Belgium, in which Howard scored, meant that the third-place match with Ireland was a boom or bust game. But as Tess will tell us, they got through, and she's excited for this summer's competition.
It was euphoric, I think, because of the amount of pressure that was on us. You know, you think about how well GB teams have done in the past at the Olympics, but, you know, this was the hardest process to get to the Olympics that there's ever been. So, you know, we had formidable opponents, and we were really disappointed not to beat Belgium a couple of days before that in the semi-final, which would have guaranteed Olympic qualification. But to bounce back, and then we knew we could beat Ireland, and so it was a case of just executing. I think we would have liked it to be a bit more comfortable, but it was, yeah, I think knowing then that the team, whoever was on that pitch at that time, qualified the squad for the Olympics, and it meant that we had jobs for the next 9 months as well.
And you were obviously a key player in the qualifiers because you were the top scorer.
Well, I have a role, and everybody has a role in the team, and sometimes my role is to be in the right place at the right time. I think, yeah, it's just a case of being really ruthless and doing what I need to do for the team. So, yeah, I'm really pleased to be able to step up for the team when in those sorts of moments.
I want to ask you about how you're preparing for your first Games, really, because you missed out on Tokyo due to injury. This is your first time competing in the Olympics. How are the preparations for that going, and how are you feeling going into the Games?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's been quite a roller coaster, a journey, as classically always say, to get to this point. And so the preparation, you know, whilst you think about, you know, the week, 2 weeks until the Games, we actually take the Eurostar next Thursday. So, you know, it's all very close, but then you just got to rely on that, the amount of training that we've done before. So preparation's going well. I mean, I think our performance in the Pro League has sort of ebbed and flowed, but I think that's kind of where teams normally sit before the Olympics. So I think really we just got to dig deep and believe that when it comes to the Games that we will perform. I believe we will do that because we have a notorious reputation for being pretty good at the Olympics.
I wanted to ask you about expectations, first of all. Have you got any kind of goals for the Games? What's the kind of expectation that in terms of what the team should be achieving and what you want to achieve?
Look, I think we, as a GB team, if you just look at our Olympic history, we've medaled at the last 3 Games. So I'm sure everybody will be expecting the team GB, you know, since Tokyo to medal. And it's something that is a dream of ours as a group. But I think we will just play each game as it comes. And I think with a team like us, I mean, we won the Commonwealth Games as England, as part of this group, a couple of years ago. And so we know what it's like to perform in big tournaments. And perhaps, and if you look at our past, you know, run of games, we've rivaled the top teams and then we've sort of lost to lower ranked teams. So it's sort of, I think, you know, we wouldn't be putting too much pressure on ourselves, but at the same time, we know we can beat the top teams. And so we'll be taking it game by game. And I think that's just a really realistic answer, is that we know we can compete at Olympic Games, and we know how to handle those big pressure moments, which I think other nations struggle. But we have experience in our team from Rio, from Tokyo, and then, you know, fresh experience. So I think it's a good mix of players, because you have the experience, but also that sort of risk-free mentality from a lot of the younger players, which is really healthy.
I was going to ask you about the group actually as well. You've got Australia, Argentina, Spain, the United States and South Africa. And actually it's quite a open competition really, because the top 4 out of the 6 qualify for the quarterfinals. There's a good opportunity there for you to progress and actually get to that medal stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really good group. We recently played Australia and only narrowly lost in the Pro League. And I think if you look at the other group, it's really important for us to finish high in our pool so that we miss the obvious Dutch team and probably some of the other higher ranked teams. And then if you get a good quarter final, and then you're into the semis. And so I think if we look back at what happened in Tokyo, we had a quarter final against Spain, which was really sort of fortuitous in that way, because then, you know, we progressed through to the semis, and then you're playing for a medal spot. So I think it's really important that we get the group right, and then I think it's all to play for, because also in these like moments it's just a game of hockey, and it doesn't matter how well you've necessarily done against teams in the past, anybody can beat anyone in these games.
I was going to ask you as well about Paris. Now, it's an interesting time in France at the moment, given that there's an election going on, and you know, there's perhaps concerns that there's a bit of a strange backdrop perhaps going into the game. From a sporting point of view, it's 100 years since they hosted the Olympic Games in 1924, so obviously there's a centenary celebration. Imogen Grant, the rower, actually said to me not that long ago about how she sees it as being like a home games, given it's actually only across the channel. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, it's kind of both. I mean, Paris is amazing as a city with the culture. Obviously, okay, France going through its own stuff. We've been through our own stuff. Hopefully France will follow our recent change. But I think what's great about it is that because it's just across the channel, so many friends and family can come out, and that makes it extra special. And I wasn't there in Tokyo, but the girls said it was hard because everything was isolated, they didn't have a crowd and that sort of stuff. And so I know that a lot of my family and friends have been able to find ways to get across, and I think in that respect it can definitely feel a bit of a home games. I mean, not potentially not with the level of French in my family, but definitely in terms of the proximity. So yeah, in that way. And I think Team GB as well have put in an incredible amount of effort to give us the best possible advantages in Paris. And so I think generally in that sense there's a lot of confidence around what the games can be for Team GB.
And just finally as well, the theme of the programme has been athletes that are not just representing Team GB but also the city in South Cambridgeshire, and you're not going to be the only Cambridge representative at the games, I believe.
In the hockey, James Aubrey, who went to my, well, I would say rival school, but I mean just, you know, neighbour school. He went to the Lees. Yeah, he's in the men's team, so it's wonderful to have, yeah, him there as well.
And I wish you and the team the very best of luck for this summer.
Thank you so much.
Cambridge's Johnny Peacock is synonymous with the Paralympics and will go down as one of the competition's all-time greats. But he's not the only local athlete involved in this year's games, which get underway on August the 28th. Will Hipwell from Papworth Everard is among this year's hopefuls. He plays boccia, a sport which has similarity to bowls, and competes in the BC2 category for athletes with cerebral palsy. The 37-year-old was knocked out in the first round in Tokyo 3 years ago in his individual event, and Great Britain were also eliminated early in the team event. Will works for the Papworth Trust in IT support, and his employers granted him extra annual leave to compete 3 years ago, something he says he was very grateful to them for doing. I began by asking him how he came to take up boccia.
Many years ago, when I was still at school, I joined a after-school sports club called the Upside Down Sports Club, and boccia was one of the sports that was available to try out. And so that's when it first started. And then sadly, the club had to fold because of lack of people to run it. And so I didn't play again for many years. And then once I'd graduated from university, I decided that I needed to take up a new hobby. So I actually went to support one of my friends from university who was competing in the England national finals competition up in Sheffield. And so I went to support him in that competition. And it was after I'd seen boccia being played in a competitive environment that I felt like I wanted to experience that for myself. So when I got home, I googled local boccia clubs in Cambridge, and I joined a club called Cam Boccia. And so I attended their training sessions on a Sunday, and then from there I entered some regional competitions and did quite well. And then from there I was selected to represent England at a competition in Poland. That was in October 2014. And then a year later, I got invited to a screening assessment day for GB Boccia, or Boccia UK as they're now known. And so I went along to that event, and I was one of only two people to be offered a place in the squads from that event. I think there was about 10 or 20 people there. It was a really good feeling to be one of only two people selected.
And for people who aren't familiar with the sport of boccia, how does it work? Because I believe it's got some similarities to things like bowls and petanque, if I've got that right.
Yeah, that's right. So it can be played individually in pairs or as a team. And so one side has six red balls and the other side has six blue balls. And you have a white jack ball and that gets thrown onto the court first. And then the red player or team throws their first ball. And then the aim of the game is to get your ball closest to the white jack ball than your opponent. And the side that is furthest away from the jack plays until they get a ball closer or until they run out of balls. You can use your ball to hit the jack and move its position around the court, or you can knock your opponent's balls out of the way to score more points. So once all the balls have been played, the person whose ball or balls are closest to the jack gets a point for every ball that's closest to the jack than their opponent's first closest ball. So individual and pairs matches are played over four rounds known as ends, and then team matches are played over six ends. And it's played indoors on a court similar in size to a badminton court.
I wanted to ask more about how the competition works, actually, because in the Paralympics, you've got different categories, and I believe that there are about four different ones for boccia as well, depending on the sort of the needs of the competitor. Have I got that right as well?
Yeah, so there are four categories. So it goes from BC1 category, which is for people with cerebral palsy that have restricted mobility. So BC1 players can still throw a ball, but they might be a bit more restricted than the BC2 category, which is the category that I'm in. So the BC2 category is still for athletes with cerebral palsy, but they have a slightly better range of movement than the BC1 athletes. And then you also have the BC3 athletes who play with a ramp to propel the ball onto the court. So they don't actually throw the ball. They have, as I say, a ramp and also an assistant who has their back to the court. But the BC3 athlete instructs the assistant in terms of ramp positioning and obviously which ball they want to use. And so the assistant, under the instruction of the athlete, places the ball on the ramp, and then the athlete has to release the ball themselves. So that's the BC3 category. And then the BC4 category is for athletes who don't have cerebral palsy, but they have some other kind of disability that affects their all four limbs. So depending on your disability, depends on which category or classification you get placed into. And then obviously you only compete within your own classification.
And the Paralympic Games is not new territory for you because you were there in Tokyo 3 years ago. Bit of a disappointing outcome for you. What have you learned from that? And I've got to ask you as well about life in the athletes' village, because it was a very bizarre time, wasn't it, in terms of what was going on in Japan at that time?
Yeah, so it was really obviously a great thing to be part of, just because purely from the fact that it was a very unique Paralympic Games, because it was obviously played during a pandemic. As you can imagine, there were some restrictions on what we were allowed to do. We weren't actually allowed to leave the athletes' village if we weren't competing. And even when we were outside, we still had to wear the face coverings as well. So that was a different restriction compared to what was happening in the UK at the time. So that took a bit of getting used to. And it was a really good experience. I went into the Games, obviously, with it being my first Paralympics. I was realistic about what I was likely to achieve. My main ambition was to go there and play to the best of my ability, which I believe I did. So from that point of view, it was good. We didn't progress quite as far as we wanted to in the team competition. But as I say, it was a really positive experience for me.
And I want to ask you about your hopes for the Paralympics this summer as well. What would be a good achievement for yourself and your team?
So for this Paralympics, it's obviously going to be a really tough competition. But I think from how the team have been playing, I think they have a good chance to do well in the competition. So, and we've obviously worked really hard to qualify for the games as well. So if we can play as well as we've done up until this point, then obviously I think we have a really, really strong chance to do well in the competition. So.
And I've just got to ask about Team GB's prospects as well, because Team GB are pretty strong in the Olympics and Paralympic Games. How do you think we'll fare this time around?
Yeah, so I think, as I say, we have a really, really strong squad. So I think we've done well in previous games. So I think we have a good chance to continue that level of performance into these games. We have a really good chance to do well. So,
and all that leaves me to do is to wish you and the team the very best of luck this summer.
Thank you very much.
And we wish all the competitors from across the city, South Cambridgeshire and beyond, good luck this summer. Bye for now.